Blog Talk Radio.
This is the UR Tennis Network. We are the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate tennis enthusiasts who promote our sport relentlessly. We strive continuously to bring news and information for players, parents, coaches, officials, businesses, and anyone else who loves tennis. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis may not be interested in them.
Good afternoon and Happy New Year. It's our first show of 2013. I'm Lisa Stone. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network and the Parenting Aces radio show. I'm so thrilled that you are joining us today. If you're listening to us live, welcome. I hope you have your phone handy so you can call in to speak with our guest today. And if you're listening to the podcast, you're in for a treat. We've got a great show today. My guest today is a fellow tennis mom. Her name is Nadine Rosenthal. And her daughter is a high school senior who has just gone through the whole college tennis recruiting process and recently signed with a program for next fall. And so Nadine's going to share that experience with us and talk to us a little bit about what the D3 recruiting process looks like and how her daughter's last several months have gone. But before I bring Nadine on the air, I want to go to commercial. First, let me give you the call-in number. It is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. I hope you'll call in and chat with us today. And we're going to go to a quick commercial, and we'll be right back with Nadine Rosenthal on Parenting Aces.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Welcome back to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I'm so thrilled to welcome our guest today, Nadine Rosenthal. Nadine, thank you so much for being here, and I am so looking forward to this show.
Hi.
I'm just so excited to talk to you about your daughter's experience with the college recruiting. And my listeners are probably very sick of me talking about my son and the fact that he is a high school sophomore and planning to play college tennis down the road. So for me to have the opportunity to hear what you guys have gone through this fall, and I'm sure it started even prior to the fall, is going to be great, and I know our listeners are going to learn a lot as well. Before we get going, though, let me just give a little background on my relationship with Nadine. We had exchanged emails several times over, probably the past 9 months or so, and finally had the opportunity to meet live and in person at of course, a junior tennis tournament. Nadine and her daughter...
We met at the Georgia State Open in Rome, Georgia, last summer, and it was hot, hotter than anything I had ever experienced, but was made so much better by the opportunity to get to meet you. And that was a great tournament because it was, you know, an opportunity for my daughter, who plays in the Northeast primarily, to play other players from around the country. There were kids there from everywhere. And it was a really wonderful opportunity. So we got to meet back then. And that was well into our college recruiting process. We had started our process, I guess, back in, let me think, around December of last year, so December of her junior year. And we started thinking about where she might like to go to college. And by where she would like to go to college, I really mean where she wanted to go to college, not where she wanted to play tennis. And we knew at that point that, you know, she was a very solid two-star player, you know, with very good skills. And we knew that she probably was not going to Wimbledon after she finished college. So we spent a lot of time really looking at schools that were going to be right for her academically. And that was our first step in the process, was to look at the schools that were going to be the right fit for her academically.
And she is a strong academic student, correct?
She is. She's a very solid student. The one thing that I would suggest doing, which is what we did not only with my daughter but with my son, who's not a tennis player and is older than she is she took her ACTs early. So we knew going in well before her senior year, you know, we knew going into the winter of her junior year what her sort of statistics looked like. We knew what her GPA was. We knew what her board scores were, you know, where they were roughly. She took it again. But, you know, it gives you a good framework to start with. And, you know, so we made a list of schools that we thought were going to suit her needs academically. And then after that, we started to think about schools where there was an intersection between the academics and the tennis. And that was sort of where tennis entered the equation.
So let me just ask you, did she know going into the whole application process that she wanted to play college tennis? I mean, was that on her list of things?
Oh, absolutely. But we really strived not to make the college search about playing tennis in college, because the truth of the matter is very, very few of the kids that play collegiate tennis are going to have the opportunity to go further than that with it. And she certainly wasn't going to. So we really tried to focus our college search on schools that were going to be the right fit for her academically, socially, location-wise, and then we started to look at the tennis. And, you know, she wanted to play college tennis, so it was a big consideration, but I think for us, we started out looking at the academics, because at the end of the day, all of these kids, with very, very few exceptions, are going to be doing the same thing the day they graduate college, and that's going to work at a job.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably not tennis related.
Right.
So,
right.
But after we made our list of schools that were going to fit her criteria academically and socially and locationally, then we looked for the intersection. So what were the schools that were going to kind of have both? You know, that she was going to be able to get the academics she wanted and that she could participate on a tennis team. And she made up her mind very early that she didn't want to be on a team where she would play number one, nor did she want to be on a team where she would sit on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
So we were looking for a school where she would be like a 3-4-5 player, which, you know, meant she could be a real contributor, but that the team was going to have some depth above her and, you know, they'd have a shot at winning. She right. also, you know, looked at which conferences she wanted, you know, were of most interest to her, and she settled on the NESCAC because she felt like that was probably, with the exception of the UAA, the strongest D3 conference out there. And the UAA, while there were teams she could play on, the programs are structured more like D1 programs in that there's a lot more traveling. And she okay. didn't want to take that kind of time away from school to be on the road as much as she would have needed to be at those schools.
And how did you determine that? Because that's a really interesting distinction that I hadn't thought about. How did you determine that one conference required more of a travel commitment than the other? Did you just look at their previous year's schedules, or did you
talk to the parents? Well, we did a couple of things. We did a couple things. First of all, the NESCAC, which is all the New England small colleges, they're very compact. They're all, you know, in a fairly tight geographic area. They're all in New England. If you look at the UAA, for example, you know, you've got Emory is in Atlanta, you've got NYU is in New York. You know, you've got these schools are spread out all over the place. Mm-hmm. So you've got to figure that if you're going to be playing conference matches, you're either going to be riding in a bus for a long time or getting on an airplane. And, you know, that just wasn't interesting to her. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot of time. I mean, we looked at NYU as an example, but not only did they travel a ton for matches, they practice up in Flushing every day. The kids, you know, get in a van and go up to Flushing to practice. And that's a lot of time away from school. So,
gotcha.
You know, but the way that we determined a lot of this is we visited 16 colleges.
Wow.
And we met with 16 tennis coaches, and we went to 16 information sessions and 16 tours at the campuses.
That's a lot of college tours, and they all start to look alike after about 3 or 4, don't they?
Yes and no. I mean, I think that the advantage that an athlete has that other kids don't, because as I say, my other child was not an athlete, and we visited 14 colleges with him, and I might add, very little overlap. The advantage that an athlete has is that when you meet a coach, you really can get a feel for the kind of school it is. The coach is a really useful window into the overall attitudes and personalities of the schools. And it was fantastic for her because she really, I think, made a much more informed decision than is available to your random kid going to any random school.
Mm-hmm. But how so? I mean, were there topics of conversation or specific questions she asked that help her make those determinations?
Well, before she went on her first meeting with a coach, which was at Swarthmore College in Philadelphia, she went to her regular coach and was talking with him. And at the time, there were a lot of seniors practicing where she practiced. And he had them all sit down and give her questions to ask. You know, just basic questions. These are not like brain surgery. What time do you practice every day? What if I have a science lab at the same time as I have, you know, practice? How do you handle that? How many, weekends a month are you generally away? You know, do you usually do your matches in a day trip or do you stay overnight? You know, those kinds of questions. They weren't like, you know, anything unique, but they were a good starting point. And
really practical questions, too, though.
Just,
I mean, very practical information.
Yeah, just really practical questions. And it really helped her because she knew what she was going to ask. I mean, you know, think back to when you were going on job interviews and at the end of the interview, so do you have any questions? And you sit there, you know, mute, like, well, I don't know, you've covered everything. And
right.
It also sort of gave her the opportunity to open discussion with the coach and to actually start talking to them as opposed to just sort of sitting there frozen.
Right.
And what we did early on in the process is before our first, like, real visit was to Swarthmore, but before we did that, we took her to visit a small college near where we live, a couple hours away, for like a dry run. Mm-hmm. And she had a meeting with the coach. I mean, he didn't know it was a dry run, which is maybe not like the nicest thing to do. He was very excited about her. But it gave her an opportunity to kind of get a feel for what a meeting with a coach would be like. And she sat down with the coach, and she talked to him, and she sort of got a sense of what it was to meet a coach, because she'd never done that. I mean, you know, she's been with her regular coach forever, and she has a very, shall we say, relaxed relationship with him.
Sure.
And it's not the same. You know, it might over time become the same, but certainly not in the first meeting is it the same.
Right.
And, you know, so she had an opportunity to really, you know, practice. And then I found that really she got a lot better. Each meeting we went to, she got a lot better at it, and she became more comfortable, and she started to take cues from what the coaches were saying to ask more sort of in-depth to those programs questions. But, you know, the thing that I will say is we laughed about it in the end because, as I say, she's ending up playing tennis in the NESCAC. And in the NESCAC, the big thing is beating Williams and Amherst. And the number of coaches who told her, not only in the NESCAC, but schools, you know, in other, like the Patriot League and the Liberty League and whatnot, other coaches, everybody wants to beat Williams and Amherst. And I think that, you know, when she finally found coaches that didn't say that that was their three-year goal, she got, you know, they somehow seemed more interesting to her because she felt like maybe they were more interested in developing her as a player as opposed to just finding a way to beat Williams and Amherst.
Right, right. That's so funny. Well,
but
you know,
do,
it's interesting. Sorry, I was going to say, you were mentioning how she got better and better at these meetings as she went through the process, and I don't know if you had the chance to listen to the radio show when Ross Greenstein was on from Scholarship for Athletes, but his big message that he keeps reiterating over and over and over again to these students and their parents is, you know, these interviews are job interviews, basically, and these kids need to go in prepared just as they would for a job interview, and you also made that analogy, and I think that's an important message for...
Well, I think the other thing that you really have to remember is it's really your whole impression that you make. This is a character thing. The coach can get your vital statistics on Tennis Recruiting or on the USTA website, right? All they
mm-hmm.
have to do is look you up, and they can get
right.
all the information they want about the way you play tennis. But most coaches would like to believe that they're building a culture. They're building a team. They want kids that are going to be able to get along together. They want kids that are going to be all for one and one for all. You know, and those are, you know, in the end, probably the most successful teams in any sport. And she really, really, I have to give her a lot of credit because, you know, this was her junior year of high school. She goes to a very, very tough, rigorous school. And she didn't have a lot of free time. But she was so incredibly diligent about cultivating relationships with these coaches. She started out in December of her sophomore year and wrote everybody, of her junior year, December of her junior year. And she wrote letters to 24 tennis coaches.
Wow.
And, you know, emails. And
mm-hmm.
she introduced herself. She then sent a video, you know, a skills and match play video to those same 24 coaches. And she really corresponded. The list started to shrink sort of naturally over time. but she regularly corresponded with probably, you know, it kind of shrunk down to the 16 we visited, and then it went down to 8, and then it went, that's kind of ended at around 8. But she, about once a month, she was in communication with those coaches, letting them know what she was doing, letting them know her, you know, if she had a good win or if she, you know, had played a tournament and didn't do as well, but what she was working on as a result of that. I mean, you really want to try. I mean, she really tried hard to sort of introduce herself to these coaches so that they would know what they were getting, not only as a tennis player, but as a person.
Right.
You know,
right.
And I think, you know, and again, I think that, you know, having the right kinds of kids on a team is always going to make for a more successful team than just going for the kids with the biggest rankings.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Let me pause real quick and give our call-in number again. It's area code 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. If you'd like to call in and chat with Nadine or me, or if you have questions for either of us about the recruiting process that Nadine's daughter has just thankfully, I'm sure, recently completed. And we'd love to hear from you guys and hear what questions you may have about recruiting, because, you know, I'm assuming that most of my listeners have kids who are on the path toward playing college tennis, and that this will be an eventual outcome for the majority of them, whether it's D1, D2, D3, or junior college. You know, so I think the more information we have, the better we all are. And again, Nadine, thank you so much for being willing to share what you've gone through. You mentioned a few minutes ago the video that your daughter sent out. And this has been one of those things that's come up time and again. There's a little bit of discrepancy about what the video should look like, and should you do something professionally, or, you know, should you go out with your iPhone and just shoot some footage of your kid playing and have them edit it and stick it up on YouTube. I'm curious, and I'm sure my listeners would be too, what did your daughter include on her video, and was it a professionally done piece, or is it something you guys put together yourselves?
Well, we did two things. The first thing we did was in December of her junior year. So that, you know, is a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
She went to her coach, and they made a video. I mean, he stuck a camera up on the, you know, back wall and just filmed her. He did, you know, a skills section, and he did 5 unedited games, and 5 or 6. And here's the thing, no coach wants, like, a heavily edited match play section. They can look, if you send them a video with your kid only hitting winners and your kid is, you know, ranked 812th, they know that it's edited.
Right,
you know,
right.
My daughter's video showed the good, the bad, and the ugly. I mean, she played well, and obviously don't, you know, send a coach something where your kid looks like they've never hit a ball before. And we all know that that does happen from time to time. But they want unedited games. So, you know, if it looks really bad, just do it again, you know,
another day
when they're playing better. But it was, the whole thing was maybe about 20 minutes long. It wasn't set to music. It didn't have, there was nothing fancy about it. It was really pretty basic. And I think it was, I can't remember what coach it was, you know, made a point of saying when she initially contacted them, you know, please send me 5 unedited games. You know, so they're not looking for a big production. They're just looking for some games that they can watch and see what your kid can do.
Sure.
And then we, later in the process, when I guess it was in the summer, we worked with this man named Tim Donovan, who runs a company called Donovan Tennis Strategies. And I can tell you more about that in a minute. But she went to a college showcase, and they made, you know, you could have a video made then. And what we did was we had a video made, and it was definitely a much more produced thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there were also 100 coaches at this thing, so they all saw her play in person. All the coaches at that point that she was seriously talking to were all at this thing. And we had the video made just so that we had something more recent to show the coaches as a follow-up to having met them at the showcase. But they had all already seen her unedited, you know, original video, and they'd all seen her play in person. But
right.
We did the more produced video, first of all, because, you know, I'm a mother. I wanted to have something to memorialize her junior tennis career where she looked really, really good. And, you know, and it was a good follow-up. It really highlighted those things that she did best.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I wouldn't do that as an introduction, because they'll know that you just edited out all the balls that they hit out or into the net or double faults or whatever.
Well, it but, sounds like that was a nice piece to have as an excuse for her to then contact the coaches following the showcase, too. You know, here's the video we ended up getting, and, you know, thanks for watching me hit, and yada, yada,
yeah,
yada.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could do the same thing without spending the $500 and just send them an email and say, thank you so much for watching me play, which, you know, is what she did with some coaches, because she really only sent it to the coaches that she was at that point. You know, we had been really narrowing down the list at that point. And so she really only sent the new video out to those coaches who she was really serious about. And to the rest, she just wrote the nice, thank you so much for watching me at the showcase kind of email. But I think the most important part, really, is the keeping in touch. And everything
yeah.
you read says that you need to keep in touch. And I really think there's a lot to be said for that. You
sure,
know, you really
sure.
want the coaches to think that you will just die if you can't go and play on their team.
Right.
You know,
right.
And, you know, and I mean, let's face it, everybody wants someone who really wants to be there. So, you know, I think that that's a really valuable part of the whole process.
At what point did y'all do the showcase? Was it during her senior year or during her junior year?
No, we did the showcase at the end. It was in June last summer, so it was just after the end of her junior year. And,
okay.
you know, if you can do something like that, especially for D3, you know, the
right.
thing with D1 is the coaches have much bigger budgets to go and watch the kids play at, you know, the big tournaments. And they'll, you know, kind of locally, they'll go and watch kids all the time. But first of all, a lot of kids playing D3 tennis are not going to clay courts or hard courts. They're just not.
Mm-hmm.
They're not playing at that level that they're going to be in those tournaments. And certainly, you know, having a coach watch your kid go out and get annihilated by the number 16 kid in the country is not something you want anybody to watch anyway. So, I mean, you know, it's the truth. You have to think about these things. Now,
right.
we did have, my daughter was very fortunate in that a lot of coaches actually came and watched her play in tournaments, you know, in our section. But that was mostly because geographically, you know, it wasn't bad. You know, they could do it. But
right.
the thing is, the Donovan showcase was great because it's really geared towards D3. I mean, there were a lot of D1 coaches there, but there were a ton of D3 coaches there. And it was at Princeton. So it definitely attracted the coaches from the Northeast, although, you know, Amy Bryant was there from Emory.
Emory, mm-hmm.
I only know the women, the women's team's coaches.
Sure,
but,
sure.
But the thing is, you know, it attracted a lot of coaches from the NESCAC, which is where my daughter wanted to be. And you know, they had D1 coaches. There were a lot of D2 coaches, but primarily there were a lot of D3 coaches. And those coaches just walked around and watched the kids play for a day and a half.
That's awesome. And I think it's important to point out that these showcases do take place in different areas of the country. So if a child is, you know, hell-bent on playing in a specific area of the country geographically, like your daughter was, there probably is an opportunity to attend a showcase type event in your section or nearby.
Right. They have those USTA college showdowns. They have the that Ed Krause tennis exposure thing up at Lehigh. They have them all over the place. You just have to look for them. I mean, we were really happy with Tim Donovan because not only did she participate in the showcase, but he is just a wealth of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows a lot of these coaches. He's been working with them for a long time. He knows what they're looking for. You know, he's a really great resource in this process. But, you know, you have to do your homework yourself.
Sure, sure. Well, and it helps if your child has chosen a geographic area ahead of time, you know, that's helpful, but not, I wouldn't think, a requirement necessarily.
Right. I mean, you know, in the end, interestingly, when she took her 3 quote-unquote official visits, because, you know, in D3 it's you have to pay for it, the school doesn't, her
right.
3 visits were not, there was one school in New England, one school in just in Pennsylvania, and one school in Minnesota.
Interesting.
So she would really, yeah, I mean, she, in the end, she really gravitated to the 3 coaches she thought were best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once she decided she liked the schools, she really went for the 3 coaches who she thought would be the best fit for her. And they turned out not all to have been in New England.
Right. Well, it's great that she was able to make that determination. I mean, I think that shows a lot of maturity on her part. And, you know, I'm not sure how many kids have that. Well, and I think, you know, as parents, we are often shocked by our kids, sometimes good and sometimes not so good. But, with athletics especially, I would think, and my son's my only athlete of my 3 kids and my last one that will be going through the college process, so it'll be a brand new experience for us too, even though I've sent 2 kids to college already. With these athletes, I think they do tend to take a bit more responsibility for the recruiting process because they have to. I mean, they understand that the coaches don't want to hear from the parents. They don't want to hear from the junior coach. They want to hear from the player, him or herself, and so it kind of forces these kids to step up and do what they need to do if they're serious about having those opportunities available.
I mean, you know, as parents, obviously, you can do a lot of the legwork behind the scenes. I mean, for example, once she had sort of, you know, figured out a list of schools, and as I say, we started out with a list of 24 schools. My husband, who is really, he's missed his calling. He'd be good at this kind of thing. He went through, you know, you don't actually know what kind of kids these coaches are recruiting. You can look on Tennis Recruiting, and, you know, you can see that the 1-star went to Duke. Now, you know, you have to take into account that, obviously, that's all self-reported, so that's not really a good window into who's on the team and who
mm-hmm.
actually got recruited. So what we did,
or who actually got to play in
right.
the lineup.
So what we did, and this is very anal retentive, I'll admit it right now, but it was it was enormously valuable. And if you're serious about having your kid end up in the right place for them and in the right place on the team, you know, a really good fit, I would recommend this. But what my husband did was he went through and he went to the ITA website. He went to the college website and then to the ITA website. And what he did was he went through and he looked at the list, the roster. And then he matched the roster up with the ITA website, and he figured out who's playing. Mm-hmm. Because, for example, Amherst College has 20-some-odd kids on their team. They are not all playing. Right. They aren't all playing. So he went through and he figured out, okay, who are the kids that are starting? And in most cases, you know, it was, you know, 8 or 10 of them, not 20. Mm-hmm. But,
right.
you know, Jackie Bagwell carries a big roster. And, but, you know, he kind of figured out who was playing. And then he went back and he looked at what their ranking was on Tennis Recruiting in kind of August, September of their senior year. So you got an idea, well, gee, you know, this kid, they graduated with a ranking of, you know, 793. How is it possible that they're playing at, you know, name your college, because they don't seem to be recruiting people with rankings that low? Well, the answer is the kid had a ranking of 322 but didn't play a tournament for a year after they got into college.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we looked at the kinds of kids that the schools were recruiting so that we could have an idea, is my daughter the kind of kid that they're looking for? You know, are
mm-hmm.
they looking for two-star players? Are they looking for three-star players? Do they ever recruit two-star players? And so you didn't waste your time on programs where there was little chance of either making the team or participating if you did. And that was useful.
Well, I mean, you described that as anal retentive. To me, that's a necessary step. I mean, honestly, why would you want to spin your wheels, you know, getting your child's hopes up for attending and playing for a school that has no interest in them? You know, it's just, it's a waste of time and energy and sets them up for disappointment. So to me, what he did sounds like a very necessary step, and especially with D3, because you know, there's such a big academic component when you're looking at D3 programs as well. And I mentioned that earlier in the show, but I want to get back to that because there is a big difference in terms of academic expectation at many of the D3 schools, right? I mean, there's not the hand-holding that there might be at a big D1 program.
Well, I think the number one difference is, first of all, every school that my daughter looked at, she had to get into. You know, there was going to be some coaches have a little, right. You know, some coaches have a little pull with admissions, and they can get you an academic pre-read, so it lets you know if your kid's in the ballpark, you know, and that you do that around, you know, September.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll take your kids' vital statistics, their GPA, their course list, their board scores. They'll go to admissions with that information, and they'll get a pre-read from admissions. And admissions will tell them if your kid is a solid candidate or, you know, where you kind of stand in terms of the applicant pool or their expected applicant pool. But very few coaches can actually push a kid through in D3. You know, they have the ability to maybe, you know, finesse it a little bit, but not significantly. And, you know, truthfully, if your kid is not a kid who should be going to, you know, name your elite school, you don't want them there anyway because
right,
they're not going to succeed academically. And that's probably the biggest difference, well, that and the fact that there are no athletic scholarships, but leaving the scholarship issue aside, you know, in D1, we know kids that have trained with my daughter that, you know, are playing D1 tennis. They didn't even have to fill out an application.
Right.
So it's a very different environment. And I will say that every coach we met with was very clear on the expectation that academics absolutely come first. And, you know, if that's what you're after, that's what she was after, it's perfect because their expectations for your tennis are very much in line with what the expectations academically are going to be at the school. But I think, you know, you have to look for the intersection. You know, what's going to offer you the you know, academics you want and the tennis that's going to be satisfying. For my daughter, she was, you know, she didn't want to sit on the bench. She felt like, you know, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it. And, you know, so we were looking for a program where she could have both. And, you know, in the end, I think she's succeeded in finding that.
Has she visited the school since she signed?
Well, you know, in D3 you don't sign.
Okay.
In D3 it's all very obtuse. She visited in August and met the coach, and then she went back in September, October, I can't remember, for what, you know, you would think of as an official visit and spent a weekend. And she has not been back since she was accepted. She applied early decision and was accepted just a couple of weeks ago. But she is planning to go to Accepted Students Weekend in the spring. But she has been in regular telephone communication with the coach through the whole admissions, you know, through the whole application process and since. And, in fact, she's just finished making a new video, which is the unedited version, to send to the coach because he would like to start working with her.
Awesome.
It's fantastic.
That's awesome.
I mean,
yeah.
I could not have hoped for anything more for her, honestly. I mean, it's really wonderful.
That's great.
But,
well, let's skip it a little bit and talk about these official visits, or quote, official visits, and what happens on those, and you said she was able to take three of those. Is that a NCAA rule, or is that something with her high school, or how did you know that only three visits were appropriate?
Well, the NCAA in D1 has rules. I think you're allowed up to four. I don't know, because we didn't, you're only allowed a certain number in Division One.
Okay.
And she was actually going to take a fourth, but then decided not to in the end. But, you know, basically she got the list narrowed down, and she was trying to decide where she thought she would apply. She knew she wanted to apply early decision, which is, you know, for an athlete, a really good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So she knew she wanted to apply early decision. She wanted to make sure she was, because it's binding, she wanted to make sure she was going to make the right choice. So we just sort of looked at the schools that she was most interested in, and she went back to those. And it was, well, it was four, but she then decided just to do the three. And she went back. And the thing was, she made all the plans with the coach. And the coach, when she got to each school, he set her up with a, you know, host for the weekend. And she got to actually spend the weekend at the school and getting to know the kids on the girls on the team. And that was fantastic because really one school really did emerge head and shoulders above the rest after
because of what factors?
Well,
I mean, what stood out for her?
Well, I think, let's see, what stood out? She loved the girls on the, I mean, she liked the girls on the other teams, but she loved the girls on the team at the school she's ending up at. She got to spend more time with the coach. She cemented her view that he is the wisest person that ever lived.
I love that.
It's so funny. She got to spend time, you know, sort of experiencing the culture of the school, which she loved. It's interesting because one of the schools she went to, she came away and she said, I just could never go to this school. One of the three. She came away. She didn't feel that the girls were committed to the tennis team. She didn't feel like they took it very seriously.
Hmm.
And she didn't want that. She didn't feel like they had, she just didn't feel like they were really connected to being part of a team. The third school, she really liked a lot, and in fact considered, if things hadn't worked out with her first choice, I think she might have applied their early decision too. So, you know, but it really, you know, it's like, you know, wearing new shoes. You know, you don't really know how they're going to be until you wear them for a while.
Right.
And this was an opportunity to kind of take the school on a little bit of a test drive and see what it was all about, you know, beyond just going, you know, beyond being a tourist.
Right, right.
And it was a really good experience. And I will say, the school that she is ending up at, the team really went. There was another prospect there the same weekend who, funny enough, she had met at that Donovan showcase. So it was nice for her because she wasn't as uncomfortable about it. But the team really went out of its way to make a really great weekend for her. They took her apple picking. They took the girls apple picking, and, you know, they went to a party with the men's tennis team. You know what I mean? They went out of their way to make her feel welcome. And that goes a long way. It really
Absolutely.
Does.
And you never
know. You want to be, well, you
want
to be somewhere you feel like people want you.
Right. And you never know what that one little thing is going to be that triggers that response in the kid. And I mean, I saw that with especially my oldest, who was a theater major, and the process was a little bit similar, you know, in that she was going to school for a specific purpose and all that. So, you know, where they think they want to be and where they end up sometimes are very different based on, you know, what may seem like a seemingly minor difference between the programs. It's pretty interesting to watch how that happens and how things unfold with them. But now have you mentioned where she is?
Oh, she's going
go?
To Bates College. She's going to Bates College in Maine. And I have to tell you, I thought she was going to end up there before we even visited. I don't know why. And it's funny because we had visited Bates College with my son, and he wasn't interested in it. And then we went back with her, and she had a completely different take on it and absolutely loved it from, I think, before she stepped on the campus. I think we drove up, and she had decided that was going to be where she went to college. And I have to be fair to say also she spent her entire childhood, 8 summers, going to summer camp in New England in Maine for 8 weeks every summer. So she was definitely predisposed towards Maine to start with.
Right.
But,
and I'm sure it felt like home to her. That's what you want.
I think that the combination of sort of the school itself and the coach, who was just really it was a very different meeting she had with that coach than she did with any other coach she met. It was a completely different meeting. And I think it really resonated with her. And he was one of the few that didn't tell her his goal over the next 3 years was to beat Williams and Amherst, which I think was, you know, a little refreshing to her.
Sure. Sure. That's awesome. Well, you and I were talking before we went on the air about what's happening in D3 tennis. And it when you talk to tennis parents at these junior tournaments, you know, everybody talks about the D1 programs, the top D1 programs, and how, you know, they want to play there and that's their goal and all of that. But you were telling me that one of the things that you've seen in this year of recruiting is that a lot of top players are signing up at D3 schools. And, I mean, even 5-star and blue-chip players are going the D3 route now. And I think that's, you know, maybe something that's new and different in the tennis world. I don't know because I haven't been in this world very long. But, you know, what do you think's going on with that?
Well, I don't think there are any blue-chips that have gone the D3 route because, frankly, you know, there's no reason for them to. You know, I mean, they can certainly, if they want a really elite education, they can go to the Ivy League.
Mm-hmm.
But There, I know of, I can think of one right offhand, a five-star that's going to be playing D3 tennis next year. And if you look at the top D3 programs, they're regularly recruiting four-star players now. And that's, you know, that's very high-level tennis. And I think, you know, there are several going to the NESCAC next year. There are several going to the UAA, and I haven't really looked beyond that, but I'll bet there are more going elsewhere as well. I think, you know, obviously you don't get an athletic scholarship, but, you know, I think that people are making different choices than maybe they used to. And, you know, for some families, they're going to be happy for their kid to go play D1 tennis, and it doesn't matter where. As long as they can get a scholarship and the kid can play D1 tennis, they're happy. They don't care if it's at, you know, Directional Michigan or wherever. They don't care. Mm-hmm. They mm-hmm. want that scholarship. And I always kind of laugh at it because, truthfully, you've spent that your college education 20 times getting your kid the scholarship.
Right. Well, but, and on, you know, on the men's side, the amount of the scholarship,
there's not
is,
even as much scholarship money.
Right.
Right.
Right. It's
but
very,
I
very
think,
small.
And I think also, though, there is an enormous, for families that really are going to need the money to get, you know, for their kid to go to college, there's an enormous amount of financial aid available. And it's not as easy as getting a full ride, obviously, but, you know, if you're willing to go through the process, there's a lot of need-based financial aid available. And I think that families are just starting to just look at this differently than they used to, because it's a tough world out there, and you want to get your kid the best possible education you can so that they're equipped to do something more than, you know, tennis drills when they're done.
Right.
And, you know, I think...
Well, and it's important to note that D3, even though it doesn't give athletic scholarship money, you can get academic scholarship money at a D3 school and absolutely, you know, should look into that as an option for paying for college.
Well, I laugh because when my daughter first started with her coach and she announced to him, like, years ago that she was going to play Division III tennis, his response to her was, "I don't train D3 players." And she really stuck with her guns through all these years. She just knew she wanted, you know, a small college. She wanted a different experience. She didn't want a big, you know, state university somewhere. And what's really funny about it now is that her coach is all about D3. You know, he's like, "Listen, you know, it's a great option. And it's a particularly good option for, like, the 2- and 3-star player. They can mm-hmm. get really, you know, really good, solid tennis. And, you know, they're not battling with the 5-star because they're never going to play. And what fun is it to go and sit on a bench and have to miss class and, you know, not get to do other things because you're sitting on a bench somewhere?"
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't feel very happy about my daughter making that decision. Go join an a cappella group instead, you know, if you're just going to be a bench warmer. There are other
right.
things to do in college that are going to be satisfying and fun. And the nice thing about Division III tennis also is if you want to join an a cappella group, you can. You know, you're not
so... You have more flexibility.
You have a lot more flexibility to do more things that are going to expand your life. You know, these kids have all given up so much through high school to be able to play this sport. You know, they've missed going to parties and participating in all kinds of other activities. It's nice if they get to college that they can do all those things.
Yes, I agree. One thing I wanted to ask you about, and I haven't I haven't looked at Bates College, their team makeup, but for your daughter, was the percentage of American versus international players an issue or a consideration?
Well, again, because she was really looking at primarily small colleges, the small colleges don't attract the international players, although there are a couple going to the NESCAC next year. But, I mean, I'm talking like maybe I think I've heard about two. One of the girls, I think, is from Canada. And, you know, it's there's not
like
a big...
Does that count if it's Maine?
I know. My daughter says she thinks it's closer than Boston.
Yeah. Right.
But, you know, I don't think that the Division III schools, at least the ones that I'm familiar with, attract the same influx of international players. So she never really thought about it. Actually, though, I think, you know, again, it would only enhance the experience, you know, if you've got kids who come from other places and, you know, I don't think
right.
she cared one way or the other. I don't think she would have wanted to be on a team where she was the only American.
Okay.
But I don't think it, you know, and there are programs, you know, D1 programs at least, that's exactly what it would be.
Sure.
And that I don't think she would have been interested in, but I don't think she had a view really one way or the other.
And it sounds like it's not an issue at Bates for
I think one of the girls might be from somewhere else, but I honestly can't remember who's
mm-hmm.
on the team now, but I can't remember. But I think, you know, again, it's the overall group, you know. It's just having a group of kids together that are going to, you know, really form a team.
Right.
Which is so different than junior tennis. You know, these kids are not used to this. So I think finding a good mix of kids is really not that easy for the coaches.
Sure. Well, let's switch gears for a second. We've just got about 3 minutes left on the air. And one of the things you and I had talked about also before we went live today was the fact that a lot of the college-bound high school seniors kind of drop off the junior tennis scene during their senior year of high school. And hadn't really thought much about that until you brought it up today. But now that I do think about it, I'm noticing that here as well. And I just was hoping maybe you could share a little bit of your daughter's perspective on how she's feeling about playing junior events now that she knows where she'll be next year and is, you know, preparing to take that next step.
Well, I think she is started out, you know, she played 20-some-odd tournaments last year, and that was a lot of tournaments. It was miserable. We were out of town constantly, and I think by the end of her junior year, she was absolutely exhausted. And, you know, then the start of the school year this year, she was really so wrapped up in the process of getting herself into college that she didn't play any tournaments. And I think really what it comes down to is there's not a lot of upside for seniors in high school to be playing even in the 18s. Because what happens is everybody's so busy playing up that you go to a tournament, you're in the 18s, you're a graduating senior, and you're playing a ninth grader who's really, really ambitious and aggressive about the whole thing. And those kids are tough to beat when you're winding down. And I think that it's just there's not a lot of upside. So you go to a tournament and you play and either, you know, you win or you lose and it's humiliating.
Yeah.
So I think that the combination of just being tired physically from all these years. I mean, she's training. My daughter is training as hard as she ever has, but her goals now are different. She's not as worried about her ranking, and she's far more concerned about being the best tennis player she can be when she goes to college. And she's fortunate in that she gets tons of match play, when she,
That's
you know,
fabulous.
With her coach.
Right.
So the need
That's
to play
great.
A lot of tournaments coupled with the desire not to have to deal with it and not have to travel makes it less appealing than it might have been, say, last year.
Sure.
You know, so.
Well, Nadine, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. We're down to our last couple seconds, and I just want to wish your daughter the best of luck. I'm really hopeful that we'll get to see each other live and in person again before she heads off to college next fall, but if not, you know I'll be keeping track of her progress and calling you on a regular basis to check in and get guidance as we get closer to the recruiting year. But I just thank you so much for sharing her experience and for being so forthcoming with all of us in terms of the process and ups and downs that you guys went through. And for those of you listening, I want to thank you for tuning in today. I will have the link posted to the podcast on the ParentingAces.com website later today, so please feel free to share with your other tennis parent friends. And just a reminder, the next USTA listening meeting about the 2014 Junior Comp changes is happening this coming Sunday, January 13th at 1 p.m. in Atlanta at the USTA Southern Annual Meeting. So for those of you in the area, I look forward to seeing you there. Have a great week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks so much.
Bye.